call the Elton, Alaska City Council meeting to order on Tuesday, February 28th. I'll ask Councilman Luby to read their mission statement.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Next, I'll ask Councilman Coleman to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Coleman. We'll recognize our visitors this evening. Missed that one. Roll call.
All right, Mr. Bell.
Here.
Ms. Coleman.
Here.
Ms. Luby.
Here.
Mr. Nicholson is absent. Mr. Robinson.
Present.
Mr. Tungle.
Here.
And Mr. Tudyakov.
Here. Okay, now I'll recognize our visitors this evening. Board of Engineers, we have two there. Thank you for being here. We have Michael Tudyakov with OCE. Anybody else? Anybody else want to be recognized? Hey, thank you for being here. This time I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda.
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungo, seconded by Councilman Luby. Coleman, you gotta speak up. Thank you. Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted. We have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of February 14th, 2023.
Move to approve the minutes of previous meeting, February 14th, 2023.
Second.
First moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Luby. Hearing no objections, the proposed minutes are adopted. The next item is a community input and announcements. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium and state your name and your message.
Hi, Roger Blakely, Parks and Recreation Director. I have two new projects for you that I'd like to, or two new programs for you that I'd like to talk to you about tonight. The first one is we're calling our Unalaska Spring Festival. And that's really like a mini HOA. And that really comes about through some conversations I've had with you members of council. At least three of you have approached us and said, we'd like to have more events like this. So we tried to do it. And so we're trying it. This April 1st will be the start of the Unalaska Spring Festival. Registration for a booth or tables or those things, and they're limited, will be starting tomorrow. So I wanted to let everybody know that that was there. And we're looking for a good spring festival. The second new program we have is a new art program. It's limited to 12 people. It's an after-school program beginning on March 3rd. It's for grades 5 to 12, and it's after-school art and every Friday in March. And so we're bringing kids in, and we have a new arts and cultural coordinator, and she's trying to do really some different things and help the kids have some artistic experience. So I give you those two and say thanks.
Thank you, Roger.
I'm Lynn Crane. I serve on the IFHS Clinic Board of Directors, and I just wanted to make sure everybody knows that we have extended hours during A season. The clinic is now open till 9 p.m. Monday through Friday. You can walk in or make an appointment. So then after A season, they will reevaluate whether it makes sense to continue to have those extended hours. For USAVE, March is Women's History Month, and we're working with KUCB again to get some of the voices of the amazing women of this town on the radio. So I'm hoping some of the women in this room will consider when I call and ask you to participate, if maybe you'll take a few minutes to answer some questions on the radio, or if any of the men in the room would like to talk about the women that have inspired them. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Child Abuse Awareness Month, so watch out for activities and public service announcements about that. I'd like to remind the council about the interagency cooperative meeting. This meeting takes place every fourth Thursday at noon at the PCR conference room. When the library reopens, we'll be meeting there. This is just a really nice way to kind of stay in touch with some of the nonprofits. Usually somebody from the school shows up, usually doesn't go more than an hour, but it's kind of a nice way to hear what's going on in the community from those of us that are kind of not working in the trenches, but kind of maybe they're seeing a different side of things than you do a lot of the time. So I'd be glad to include you on the email distribution list if you'd like me to. Soup Off is March 25th, which is less than a month away. I'm surprised my hair isn't on fire yet. Categories are: number one, soup, stews, and chilies; two, seafood; three, vegetarian; four, copycat recipes. I guess that's like copycatting something from Olive Garden or something. They have really good soup, I guess. And then the last one is world flavors. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Virginia Hatfield, Museum of the Aleutians, and I just wanted to let people know we'll have an exhibit opening March 24th. This is for the Community Art Show, which the Aleutian Arts Council will curate. So if you are interested in submitting art, the deadline is March 11th, and you will contact the Aleutian Arts Council at aleutianartscouncil@gmail.com or contact Stacy Alvarado if you have her phone number. We can help if you call the museum at 907-581-5150, and we can help you get connected. So we hope to see you guys all March 24th at 6 p.m.
Thank you.
Hello, Rufina Shishnikov. Lived here all my 70-something years, grew up here. I want to bring to your attention the issue of the front beach of the town. It is rapidly disappearing. I've been walking the front beach. I've walked it thousands of times probably in my lifetime, but the last few nights walking down, the incline of the beach used to be really sloping, less than 45 degrees from the shore to the road. It's now like 45 or 90 degrees in places where you cannot get up to the beach. The city is pushing gravel, dirty mud, rocks, grass, shot rock onto the beautiful beach that had smooth, big rocks, probably 5-6 inches in diameter, flat, smooth rocks. All the flat, smooth rocks are buried and gone. The grass that's growing there is swallowing up all of the gravel. And all the garbage is so entangled in that grass. Grass is not a natural thing to the beach, at least not since the war. People have been able to drive their wheelbarrows down to the front beach to harvest firewood ever since wheelbarrows first came here. We used to drive our trucks and cars down to the front beach in the 70s. You could get down to the beach anywhere from the Jesse Lee down to Panalaska, Carl's Commercial, and drive back up again. We used to drive on the sand. There's no sand, hardly sand left. A lot of sand was taken out by the war, but the sand is, I don't know where the sand is going. It's disappearing. People are harvesting rocks off the front beach. I have replaced rocks that people have hauled up to the road, rocks as big as a foot, 10, big rocks, harvesting them. I've tumbled them back down because I didn't want them taken. When you take the big rocks, there's nothing there to protect the smaller gravel. Please do something about the front beach. My sisters came back to visit me, one a year and a half ago and one last summer, and they asked me, where's the beach? What happened to the beach? I said, well, I don't know. It's just disappearing. Put a stop to the harvesting of rocks on the front beach. There aren't enough rocks left there for everybody to build their gardens. There are people who are using rock to build drainage around their houses. So because they say the round rock is better for drainage than the shot rock, a better drainage, it got to put a stop to it. That beach is historical and it's beautiful. It was beautiful. It's ugly today. I encourage you, please take a walk on the front beach because it's a sad thing to lose. My kids are upset about it, my little girls. I'll bring this up at the Planning and Zoning and the Historical Committee and the tribe because we need to save that beach. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ruthie. A lot of that beach we've had lost, like I understand, major storms that we've had, we haven't had for years. So we'll look into that, see what we can do to work with the community. Get it checked out.
Mr. Mayor, I have some announcements, please.
Yep.
Same ones I've done the last couple of meetings. Tomorrow is the deadline for senior citizens and disabled veterans to apply for the property tax exemption. And it's also the deadline for licensed businesses to submit their personal property tax returns. March 15th, for all of you council members, school board members, planning commission, city manager, and mayor, your public official financial disclosure is due. If you file that online, you must bring a copy in to me in the clerk's department, please. And then March 31st is the deadline for senior citizens to apply for that $200 sales tax refund. Thanks.
Thank you. And would anyone else in the chambers wish to make an announcement of interest to the community? Okay, thank you. Next, anyone on Zoom or on the telephone?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Our next item is the public comment on agenda items. This is time for the members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If you don't want to wait until the item comes up on the regular agenda to comment later during the agenda meeting, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. You have 3 minutes. No one wants to speak. Anybody on the Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Next item is reports. City manager, I'll turn this over to the city manager, assistant city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. This is Bill Homkamp. Just wanted to point out a few things. We noted that we anticipated the proprietary fund and CMMP presentation to be on March 9th, and we've had to push that back to the 28th. The other is some work that we've been doing on Captain's Bay Road, the Pyramid Creek Bridge crossing, and that work we're doing with the grant that we got from the Denali Commission. And then we were looking to get out our compensation section on represented employees, working to get that RFP out. And Chris, do you have anything to add?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Very fine.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thank you. I just wanted to add that we had our trip to Juneau for the Alaska Municipal League, and we got to meet with Senator Hoffman and Bryce Hedgman. We got quite a few reports at AML on DOT, on some of the issues regarding the pension fund, et cetera. Right now in the legislature, the discussion is the governor wants a full permanent fund, $3,800. And of course, education hasn't seen a major increase in years. So the Senate Finance Committee has said that there won't be, you can't have both. You can't have a full permanent fund and fund education. As you all may recall, there was a lot of discussion about forward funding last year, for the schools, which makes a lot of sense because the school board needs to know, or the administration needs to know what's happening with regards to teacher contracts in the spring. And, you know, the legislature isn't done till May 18th. So anyway, to make a long story short, the value of oil per barrel is down. And so they are not talking about capital right now at this time. Any kind of sort of capital money being available. We'll keep you abreast of what's happening in Juneau. But I don't know if you want to add anything, Dennis, to the discussion. But that's all from here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Russ, Dennis, you're on mute.
I was on mute, yes. Sorry. Chris pretty much covered it. For every $100 less in a permanent fund, I think it equals, $64,000 or something to that effect. So what I'm hearing is that if there's to be any capital project or school, an increase in the base student allocation, the BSA, it's going to have to be a reduced dividend. So anyway, it's going to be a hard pill for some to swallow, but I think our infrastructure is more important than giving dividends out so people can go to Hawaii and elsewhere. Personal opinion, but I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Let's see, any questions from council or city manager? Councilman Luby.
Yeah, Chris, on the setting the mill rate, you want to discuss that on March 28th. My personal opinion, I don't know how the rest of the council members feel about it. It would be kind of nice to wait to see what the school has to offer so that we can, you know, the mill rate is what we can change if we need to, you know, depending on what the school's looking for. So my suggestion would be to wait until after we hear the budget from the school.
Mr. Mayor, if I can.
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Through the mayor, to Councilmember Luby, I think we'll have a pretty good idea of what the school may want, but it's totally up to you guys. It helps us with budgeting if we know earlier, but it's totally a policy decision by the council. But the mayor and I and Bill Homka met with Jim Wilson about 3 weeks ago, and I think Jim has a fairly good idea of what he's going to ask for, but as we get to that meeting, we'll talk to him again, but it's totally up to the city council. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Rebut? Anybody else? Okay, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, City Manager and Vice Mayor Robinson. Next, we've got the annual reports from the city boards, committees, and commissions. I'll turn this over to the assistant city manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think first up, we have Ms. Lynn Crane from USAVE.
Well, I'm representing the library tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry, the library. Library Advisory Committee.
Mr. Mayor, members of City Council, I'm Emlyn Crane, and I'm the current chair of the Unalaska Public Library Advisory Committee. I've served on this committee for about 28 years. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to say a few words as we present the library's annual report. The last several years have been challenging for all of us. I'm sure you know that. During the darkest days of COVID, the Unalaska Public Library devised innovative ways to continue to serve the community while preserving staff and patron safety. In 2022, after many years of having the lowest staff turnover of any city department, The library coincidentally experienced the departure of several long-term staff members. When the city wisely decided to move forward with the library expansion project, the library had to pack itself up and move to a new temporary location. Despite all of these upheavals, the Unalaska Public Library has continued to provide stable and vital services to our diverse and ever-changing community. For this, we can only credit our inestimable staff, library assistants Pete Blackdianoff, Katie Hewling, Diana Ekafon, Pinky Suti, June McGlashan, Eric Wolford, and Bernard Duco. I am in the library frequently, and I am consistently impressed by and proud of the manner in which these consummate professionals managed to fulfill their many, many roles. This was true in the years when we had a staff of seasoned employees, and it is true today when many of our library staff are still new. It isn't just a matter of luck that we've had such extraordinary library employees. It's truly a reflection of the skill and mentorship of our librarian, Karen Kresh, the one hiding behind me, and the atmosphere she creates for her staff and her patrons. As technology has expanded, and even as our local access to technology has improved, I still hear people, even smart people, asking if libraries are still relevant. But libraries, especially public libraries, especially in rural areas, are more important now than ever. You've heard us talk about some of this before, and we're probably every year, and we're talking about it again because it's still true and it's still important. The Unalaska Public Library's mission is to educate, enrich, and inspire community members by connecting them to the world and to each other. That connection happens through access. This is what all libraries are really about, what they've always been about, access to all kinds of materials and services, but most of all, access to information. Why is this so important in this day and age? Everything is available online, right? Yes, but to whom? Just because something is online doesn't mean it's free or accurate. According to the Marshall School of Business at USC, quote, the digital divide is growing. The gap between not only the rich and poor, but the information rich and the information poor is growing at an increasing rate. As more information is available online, too many people are without the means to access it, and libraries play an essential role in democratizing it. The quality of the information on the internet varies. As easy as it is to search for information, being able to distinguish between what's reliable and what's unreliable is ever more important. A librarian can assess the quality of the information and help better guide users, end quote. Libraries provide access to information to anyone who seeks it, and librarians and other library staff help educate patrons on how to separate the wheat from the chaff. Our library helps to create an informed citizenry, which in this day and age is more important than ever. A recent New York Times article titled "A Love Letter to Libraries Long Overdue" states, quote, just as reading has changed from paper to pixel to audio and tools for research have streamlined, so have the places that house the goods. Silence is no longer a requirement. Versatility is. It's easy to romanticize libraries, but the fact is they're not just about the written word. Were they ever? As local safety nets shriveled, the library roof magically expanded from umbrella to tarp to circus tent to airplane hangar. The modern library keeps its citizens warm, safe, healthy, entertained, educated, hydrated, and above all, connected. Libraries have always been a place of worship for a certain type of person, but they're also community centers, meeting houses, and pop-up medical clinics offering vaccines, homework help, computer classes, craft sessions, and tax advice. Best of all, you never need a reason or an invitation to go to the library. You aren't required to make a reservation ahead of time, or to purchase a cup of coffee while you're there. You can pop in when your Wi-Fi is on the fritz, or you need a break from your roommates or your husband. You might go there to dry off or to cool down, to study for an algebra test or to read a romance novel, to stock up on thrillers or to take stock of your less than thrilling life, to meet a friend or to be alone for a bit of excitement or a moment of calm. We all know that books connect us, that language has quiet power. To see the concentration, curiosity, and peace on faces lit by words is to know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, in a time rife with shadows, that libraries are the beating hearts of our communities. What we borrow from them pales in comparison to what we keep. How often we pause to appreciate their bounty is up to us, end quote. I find that very moving. I love our library. I find it exhilarating to be even a small part of this fundamental institution that embodies the values of education, social connection, equal access, privacy, preservation, and intellectual freedom, just to name a few. In this age of deep divisions and inequities, political, social, economic, libraries serve to level the playing field. Libraries are for everyone, regardless of who you are, where you come from, what you believe, who you love, or whether or not you have any money in your pocket. Our library, all public libraries, are democracy in action. For me, that will always be vital and exciting and worth celebrating and worth fighting for. The library staff and advisory committee members are literally shivering with anticipation as we gear up for the grand reopening of the renovated facility. Thoughtfully designed with significant community input from adults and young people, our remodeled building features larger gathering spaces, not just for boring board meetings, but for classes and training and workshops and art activities and cultural events, as well as bigger teen and children's areas and quiet rooms for research and study for students and lifelong learners. We expect to reopen in April, and we will be so, so, so excited to welcome you into your new Unalaska Public Library. In closing, the Unalaska Library Advisory Committee would like to thank you again for the opportunity to speak to you tonight, for your past support, and for your commitment to investing in the expansion of this fundamental local institution. And we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Thank you, Lynn. Any questions from the council? Councilman Tungle?
So you guys got an exact date when it's going to be the opening for the library? In full function?
Yeah, we just had a meeting this morning where we learned the final timeline for the shelving, which is the last piece that we needed to determine an opening date. So right now it looks like April 29th. That's what we are shooting for.
Thank you.
Councilman Robinson, any comment, question?
I don't have anything, no. Thank you. Thank you for the report.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Well, thank you very much for the report to the update on the community of the city library.
Next, Mr. Mayor, we have Mr. Thomas Rufos, who chairs the Parks, Culture, and Recreation Committee, to give their report.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thomas Rufos, the chair of the Parks, Culture, and Recreation Advisory Committee. First, I'd like to start with a thank you to our PCR staff and for all of their hard work this year. The committee's major role is to provide insight and feedback on, you know, programming, events, operations, and provide opportunities for the community to interface with the advisory board and then pass that information along to staff. Eyes and ears outside the community, outside of the PCR building, basically. Just provide more information. The committee has been active this year in the playground improvement projects, as well as reviewing programming of PCR, reviewing our business plans for each of the, you know, sub-departments of PCR as well. We have started to work with our Parks and Rec staff for the planning process for the CMMP and for the upcoming program to create a long-term Parks and Rec plan. We're really excited about that project, and we're really looking forward to that this coming year. To summarize a few things that have happened this year, our committee revised tone bylaws. We want to provide a little bit more transparency, and we want to provide a little bit more understanding for ourselves as what our board does and how it helps our community. The Aquatic Center this year has provided a additional opportunity for CPR and first aid training to community members. We're very excited that they've been able to do this. The rec staff this year has done an excellent job adapting to, you know, various challenges around the community, especially this year with Heart of the Aleutians, you know, rain events and, you know, impacting trunk or treats and a few other events this year. Upcoming, should be on the lookout for a new website and smartphone app similar to what the Unalaska School District is using, especially with the advent of advanced internet coming out to the community. So we're really looking forward to moving the department forward and working with staff to do that. We've had a few changes this year. Nick Crohn took a job in the lower 48 as an operations manager. He's been a longtime member of our Parks and Rec staff over there. And Julian Longo has stepped in to take his place. She's done a wonderful job so far from what we've seen. So we're excited to have her on. And I'd also like to highlight additionally that PCR staff was available during the December rain emergency, providing support for the EOC. We'd like to thank them for continuing to flex with the needs for the community and providing support for the emergency operations system, something, you know, vastly out of their normal kind of scope of work. We stand behind the creative solutions and services that are provided by our Parks and Rec staff and department, as well as their enforcement of new safety rules and protocols in order to continue to provide the wonderful services that they have. And if you look up on the board there, we have just a couple of actions and concerns that we've reviewed over the last year. If you have any questions.
Council, have any questions for Thomas? Councilman Robinson?
I don't. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Thomas. Good job.
Mr. Mayor, next up, there's a change in presenter. Travis Swangle is not able to be here this evening. We have Mr. Ian Bagley, who is the co-chair of the Planning Commission, as well as the Historic Preservation Commission.
All right, so my name's Ian Bagley. Kind of bear with me here as I'm kind of got tossed into this today. So I guess we'll start with the Planning Commission stuff first. We have Planning Commission and Historic Planning Committee stuff to do. You know, we met six times last year. You know, out of those six times, we came up with a few Planning Commission recommendations to council. We had three zoning amendments, no code revision, one platting document to the city council as well for action 2022. There's just a couple things to really, kind of look at here. The main thing to look at here is that we, you know, the only real change was with the Arctic Chiropractor lot. That was changed from, you know, they proposed high density residential, but after the business was no longer operating on that property. So that was denied due to HCR being too high of a use in favor of a moderate density. So that happened in April, and then we, you know, approved it again, denied resolution originally, and then approved it. Later on, the only other thing I think is probably of note is the we're still working towards in the platting board section. We approved a extension in 2022 for the this Parkside Estates. So, you know, basically we're working with them. I think they have everything pretty much hammered out. Other than the paperwork side of it. The physical work's 90% done. What he has left is, I believe, engineering paperwork. And so once that is concluded here, it needs to be done by April 17th, or the project will cease. I guess that's where we're at with 2022. Is there any questions on that?
Thanks. Yeah, and any questions or comments for planning and zoning? Councilman Robinson?
Negative. Thank you. Thank you, Ian.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
So if that's all right, I'm going to go ahead and move on to, you know, the historic preservation goals and resolutions. We had three meetings in 2022. I think something that's of note is, you know, we had, you know, we reviewed these letters from the Army Corps of Engineers, and basically, you know, we had this meeting in April, and then we had another follow-up in December, and, you know, where they're at with that, from my understanding, is that, you know, it took this amount of time just to kind of get things moving. So now we're at a point where, you know, I think they're starting to see some progress and moving forward with that. As far as goals for 2023, you know, I think the main thing is that people are looking for, you know, improving public engagement with the historic preservation, website improvements, you know, celebrating Preservation Month in May, and improving kiosks and signage and wayfinding around town. So, you know, something was brought up the other day when we were talking about this, and, you know, there's a lot of different places where you can go and look at signs around town, and they're starting to get kind of worn down. So if we want to still have that stuff available, we're going to probably have to do some maintenance in that area. Other than that, those are the main bullet items here for preservation goals for 2023. Is there any questions or anything I can help out with there?
Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. Is there any change on, or what's going on with the Henry Swanson House? I know that's come before us before a few years ago, and like what to do with it, what's the goal for having it? Because I know we put some time and effort into.
Right.
So I don't know. Do you know, like,
we can look where that's it.
What direction that finally decided to move to?
To my knowledge, right now they have done a wonderful job of renovating and restoring, I guess, the interior, but there is not a current use for it, to my knowledge. That is definitely something that we can bring to the Historic Preservation Commission, and we can work towards looking for a plan to make it available, I guess, to the community, or you know, some kind of goal. If you give us some kind of direction, we'll, you know, kind of work in that direction.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions for planning commission? Okay, thank you very much. Next. Is it?
That concludes tonight's presentations, I believe.
Historic preservation?
He did both.
Oh, he did Mayor. Both of them.
Yeah, Ian did both of them.
I see. That is all the same. Good job. All right. Next item is our work session. Next, I'd like to motion the second to go into work session.
I'm moved to go to a work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Tungo. Hearing no objections, we'll go into a work session at 6:47. First item up is the Unalaska Bay Entrance Channel Dredging Project, U.S. Corps of Engineers. Jason Garrett, Project Manager, and Nathan Epps, H&A Section Chief. Turn it over to you, fellas.
All right, thank you very much. We're very happy to be here, Mr. Mayor and council members and the members of the community. If you'll allow me real quick, when I was a little boy, I probably was in sixth grade. I remember reading in the National Geographic at my grandparents' house about Dutch Harbor and seeing the pictures of all the big giant crabs. And that was in the, I guess, the 80s. So it's been a dream come true to come out here and to probably get stuck another day with you and your community. But it's an honor to be here. So thanks for welcoming us and allowing us a chance to update you on where we're at with this project. Right now, I believe that everybody realizes the bar out there, creates some economic inefficiencies as well as some dangerous operations to unload out in the bay and try to get the cargo ships light enough to go over this bar, as well as the pilots having to wait to sometimes go over that bar, depending on the tides. And so our big task here has been to look at what we're going to do here, as far as understanding where that bar sits with the bathymetry of knowing it's negative 42 feet below the surface and the surrounding area is negative 100. And so it's been a bit of a task for our team to be able to understand the problem and be able to put all the engineering we have at our disposal and go for it here. But the big goal is to increase the efficiency of the fleets, of the ships, and of the port itself, as well as create a safer environment for those who are coming in to seek refuge or to transfer cargo and commodities. We know that there was great World War II presence here, and we were able to work with our center of expertise, and we've received a low probability of encountering any MECs in the bay. This is great news for the project and allows, these are explosives. So it's a big deal. And so allowing us to not encounter those obviously helps us to, there was some contingency was built in the feasibility and not understanding what was under there. And we gave all the documentation that we've received to date from several different studies, including the Navy. And they tore through all these documents last summer and then came back with low probability. So great news for the project. Maybe some better news I can give you. I just found out this afternoon that the Alaska District is fully funded for construction. So we're ready. We're ready to go as soon as we can get through all the design portion. I was here 11 months ago, and in that time, we've been able to get to a 95% design status as of last month. We've accomplished all of our geotech investigations out in the area of our prism. We're preparing right now the project partnership agreement between the Corps of Engineers, the Alaska District, Pacific Ocean Division, USACE, and the City of Unalaska. And I should have that hopefully by next week, so you guys can start reviewing that. On 16th of March, we're going to be hosting an industry day event, which allows us an opportunity to teach the industry about the requirements for the project, as well, it gives us an opportunity to receive feedback from the contractors and those interested, and it allows us to see who can, a better understanding of the industry, who can support this project. So another big item coming up. We're estimated to advertise this project in May of 2023. So we're full steam ahead right now. Like I say, we're 95% designed. We're going to 100%, and then we'll start looking at building that RFP for solicitation. And we're estimating to make a fourth quarter FY23 award at this point. So we're very excited about the progress that the project delivery team has made at this point, and we'll jump into a few more technical slides here.
And I'm Nathan Epps. I'm the chief of the hydraulics hydrology section in the Alaska District. I'll just kind of walk you through what we've learned in the design process and update you on where we're at with the 95% design. So what we have up here right now is actually a bore log map of where we did a geological investigation of the bar and the material under the bar. During feasibility study, the Alaska District did a geophysical mapping when we surveyed the bar, and that's basically running seismic waves through the bar to try to figure out what's in it. For this investigation, it was September 10th through the 17th of this year, of last year, and they actually drilled cores 25 to I think up to 80 feet deep on the spit to figure out what kind of material we have in this area. And the results were basically, it's a mix, it's glacial till. It's sand and gravel with a lot of silt mixed in and cobbles and boulders. So there was a glacier that just pushed this material up in this formation, and there it sits. So that's new information for us. Having that information led us to the conclusion that it's likely this material is dredgeable without explosives. So that means a contractor could come in with mechanical methods during the depths and be able to remove it without having to do blasting. For consideration for the contractor, though, and for the contract, we are going to allow blasting to take place if that's needed to loosen this material for extraction.
Presently working on IHA.
And we're presently working on the mammal hazard assessment for that activity. So here's the status of the current designs. What I'm showing on the screen is just the current plan view. The channel dimensions have not changed from feasibility study. We had great participation from the Alaska pilots. So it was very well defined. It's approximately 600 feet long by 600 feet wide with a few adjustments in geometry to allow the ships to come in tighter towards the spit and be able to drift a little bit farther to the south as they move past. What has changed is the disposal site. So it might be a little hard to see on this map. The disposal site is actually directly to the southeast of the channel. That way material can be excavated from the bar and moved a very short distance to be able to be disposed in deeper water. And the site's approximately 100 to 110 feet deep. So it's very deep water, a great place to put this material at very low cost. That's why it was primarily chosen. Go ahead and go to the next slide, please. This is a profile of that plan. So the top view shows the cross section of the channel itself, 600 feet wide at the bottom. The authorized project depth is minus 58 feet mean lower the water. Existing depth is about minus 42 feet mean lower the water. So that's a significant increase in depth. We allow payment up to minus 60 feet mean lower the water. Sorry about that. Thanks. Okay, so the required depth is minus 58 feet mean lower low water, and we'll allow payment for material extracted up to minus 60 feet mean lower low water. We found that the material is likely to be stable at side slopes of 1.5:1, but to make it more economical for the contractor to be able to pull it out all the way out to the edge of that slope, we're actually going to pay for materials to be removed up to slide slopes of 2:1 to make that shallower and therefore more stable, which we believe will reduce maintenance requirements in the future. That bottom figure shows the profile of the channel cut. So essentially, if you were looking at just across the bar, this would be a slice through it. So you see the profile of the bar and the cuts that we will make in the bar to make the channel. So as you see, outside of the Iliac Bay, the depths are minus 60 to minus 70. As you cross the bar, you get up to minus 42. And then when you enter the harbor, it drops down very quickly to minus 100. So the disposal site is just immediately adjacent to the dredge site. We did that for the possibility that if they're finishing the dredging section, sometimes the contractor will actually drag a heavy bar across the bottom to knock out any high spots that they might have missed. This way they can essentially scrape it straight into the disposal site without a lot of rework. So that should be very efficient for them. Next slide.
Hold on, everybody. Make this sit for a second.
Yeah. So that's actually all we have to present on the design itself. Are there any questions for us at this time?
Have any questions for Corps of Engineers? Councilman Bell?
I'm not sure from the map there. It doesn't really necessarily define where the dredge area is, or I'm not understanding. But the GCI just laid fiber optic cable. Is that in a different area from where the dredge tailings will be dumped?
So we did not have any identified cable areas across the bar. I'm assuming GCI's cable area is in a different location, but was not identified in either survey or geological investigation.
Yeah, that was something that was just laid here in the last, whether it's 6 months or whatever it is. So, I know this has kind of been a question, and I'm not sure if there's hydrology that goes along with this. Is by deepening that channel in there, does that increase the flow of water in and out and cause more erosion or potentially cause more
erosion on the beach, particularly Front Beach, which was just mentioned. So strictly speaking, yes, this does increase the conveyance of water across the bar. It doesn't really change the volume exchange during tides, though, because the water surface is trying to get to the same elevation, regardless of how we dredge the bottom. We did model the wave activity with and without the dredge channel. And what we found was there was zero difference at Front Beach. We essentially were able to find a 2-foot wave that would occur at Front Beach during a 30-year storm event, both without a channel and with a channel.
Okay, and my last question would be, since we've done core samples and this is not, originally it was thought that this was a lot of bedrock and, you know, hard material, could that potentially impact the cost of this or reduce the cost of this project from what was originally thought?
Yes, the assumption during feasibility study was that all the material would have to be blasted for removal, and the cost estimate was based on that. So contractors might bid this cheaper and not bid essentially a blasting program, but just a clamshell excavation or a mechanical excavation program. So we might see bids come in lower than what we had anticipated during the feasibility study.
Right. I think it's important to note, too, that items with the blasting, we're still going to leave the means and methods up to the contractor. We don't want to dictate how he's going to come in here and dredge this area. So, but, and I know that we will have a reduction because of I guess maybe the certainty that it's not what we thought it was. And our at 95%, we start shoring in a little bit more, or honing in, I should say, on that cost estimate in regards to contingency. So I think we'll have that'll be honed in, and the disposal area being adjacent to the dredging area now, rather than a mile, or I think we had a 3-mile as well in the feasibility. Both of those should get us in a lower estimate.
And then my last question would be, as far as maintenance, is this something that may need to be dredged, you know, in the next 20 years or sooner or longer?
So with the nature of this material, we're anticipating very little maintenance is needed. There isn't an active beach that's moving material into this bar. There is a beach that's near it, but the depth of the beach material is below where we're dredging. So we don't anticipate needing to do any maintenance very regularly here. We always put the maintenance line item in these projects, though, just so there is that federal responsibility to maintain channel depths. So if we do notice shoaling in the course of our project condition surveys, then we would define an O&M need to come out and do dredging.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Tungo.
Thank you for the presentation. It is really good to hear that it's fully funded. That's a big deal for us to get going on this. So I don't really see where's the place it's going to be disposed of or store the material on the front beach on the south end of the airport?
It's going to be in a deep water, essentially, we call it an offshore disposal site. So the material is disposed of in water. So the kind of the bare white area is the channel cut, and immediately to the southwest.
This is the channel. You see on both sides where it's the end. Right
there. Okay, I see it
now. What we expect will happen is that a dredger will have a scow that they'll place the dredge material into, typically a split hull barge, so they can just excavate it off the bottom, put it in that scow, and that scow just has to go a few hundred feet to the disposal site, open up its hole, and dump the material there. So that's what we expect the contractor will bid. They're up open to the world of means and methods, but I expect that'll be how it works.
So any material that need to be disposed of on that when they dig, it's going to be separated somehow, or if there's any kind of material that comes.
Oh, so there was a chemical analysis done during the geological investigations as well. There were no contaminants identified that require remediation within the dredge prism, so the material would just simply be dumped in its raw form into that site.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Ungo. Councilman Coleman.
So since your disposal site is just south of the bar there, I kind of curious about water quality standards then, because we have a processor right inside the spit. Not sure where they get their seawater for processing. It might be inside, but it kind of just raises a concern about, since you're dumping right there, what might affect to water quality in that area and how much that will disperse. And possibly, it seems like a kind of a far shot for some processors, but we do pull from seawater and make sure that it's a small dispersal area for that sediment.
Yeah, so to my awareness, that has not been studied at this time. If there is an intake close to this site, that's probably something that needs to be identified so that we can look into it.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Robinson, and I have a couple questions.
Yes, the question I had was on the wave action. I just wanted to have the Corps reiterate what they found in the initial hearing, that it wouldn't change anything on the front beach. And I guess thank Councilman Bell for asking that question and clarifying. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. I had a question on the disposal site. Was there a survey done on it regarding what's laying on the bottom? Is there anybody did a survey on that?
Well, I know we had our environmental team take a look at this. Anything that they found, we can definitely gather, but nothing that has been identified as,
I say it, but somebody should check it out. World War II, they loaded up barges with ammunition that they left here.
Yeah.
And dumped some there, dumped at least the load. And eventually they were caught, and so they had to go out deeper water. But even then, in 1973, I think it was the Silver Wave, was going through there and brought up a submarine mine. And it was in that general area where he dropped his net to wash it or whatever, mm-hmm. and picked it up on the way out. So I have concerns. I don't know. Whatever was down there 45, 50, 100 years ago is pretty well deteriorated, but it just, I think somebody should look in there. But that's up to you guys.
Yeah.
That's the unexploded issue. Or the other one is, When you're doing this, how long will it take? How long are you looking at to close the channel, or basically close the channel, because the ships will still be coming through here, whether you're doing anything or not. They've got to pick up the product.
Right. I
and
think
they'll do it at high tide like they do now, but still, their channel preferred is the one you're dredging.
Right. Yeah, we're fully aware that it's an operational port. We'll be requiring meetings between the port and our contractors on a weekly basis to understand the schedules. I think the communication should greatly reduce any impacts to the fleet or to our team as well.
Okay,
it's
thank
difficult
you.
To have the port in some of our construction meetings as well. So I would say we're going to have double the chances to have communication take place. But we would be definitely looking for a schedule and wanting to broadcast that to our dredge team as well, so they're fully aware.
And when you have this, maybe you call it a briefing meeting sometime before the RFPs go out, you'll be talking to the shipping companies other than the ones that are here, like FOSS, and they come through here now and then. Going on their way up north, and they pull in here to get out of a storm and anchor up and inside of the spit. Sometimes they do that. So I don't know what time of year you're going to be doing this, fall or winter or summer. I know summer will probably be the best time.
I'm anticipating summer. Take. Yeah, I think if we have a fourth quarter, September, kind of October award there that they would likely be, well, there's probably 3 or 4 months of pre-construction items that need to be taken care of, as well as organizing the mobilization. So I think they'd be mobilizing in the spring, and then we'd see our activity in the summer.
Yeah, thank you. That's all I've got. Anyone else? Before we go, yeah, thank you very much for the update. Look forward to working with you and getting this project done.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, we'll need a motion to and a second to return to regular session.
I make a motion to go back to the regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Holman to return to regular session. Without objection, we're back in the regular session at 10 after 7 p.m. We are now on the regular agenda. Persons wishing to speak on the regular agenda items must sign up with the city clerk. Anyone in the chambers wish to speak? Anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Thank you. Our next, the first item on the regular agenda is Resolution 2023-09, amending the funding formula guide for the Community Support Grant Program to include revenue from the tobacco excise tax. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the Resolution 2023-09?
Move to adopt Resolution 2023-09.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Luby. I'll turn this over to the city manager for review.
Well, Mr. Mayor, if you recall, and the council members, that we had a discussion about this briefly at our last meeting. Councilman Luby brought up the fact that the tobacco tax was available, and we wanted to have a means to convey that to community organizations that are eligible. And Margie Veter took that and turned it into the presentation for you tonight, including the resolution. So Margie?
I don't have a lot to add to that, but in 2019, you guys memorialized by resolution the funding for formula for the community support grant program. And then a couple years later, you enacted the tobacco excise tax and dedicated that fund, the revenue from that tax, to the community support program for public health or tobacco education and cessation programs. So this is kind of just a housekeeping measure to update that resolution to include the tobacco excise tax revenue in the community support grant funding formula. So that's what this resolution does. And we recommend adoption.
Thank you. Any questions from the council on the resolution 2309? Councilman Coleman?
Nope, just a thank you. I know that when this came up last year, we tried to appropriate that money and it never, the way it was said, and wanted to use it, and so now it's in there. Will be displayed when we look at grant funding, mm-hmm. And what's available, and be able to allocate those accordingly. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman, Councilman Bell.
You know, we approved this increase in this excise tax not too long ago, and to this date, I still get every once in a while someone talking about, didn't we vote that tax down? Well, you know, previous couple of years before that were when it was included in the alcohol and marijuana, increasing an excise tax on that, or increasing a tax on that. The perception, at least from my chair, is that this whole increase in the excise tax was an end around that vote. Now it's been voted up. Awarded these monies in previous actions, but including it rolling it into the community grants, I'm afraid it muddies it up what the original intent of that increase in the excise tax was, and I'm just at this point I'm not going to support this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Robinson.
Mr. Mayor, before you, would you like me to respond to that a little bit or not?
Sure.
So the tobacco excise tax was not increased. It was a new tax that the city council enacted. We had not previously had an excise tax on any products, but you did enact this tobacco excise tax on tobacco cigarettes and tobacco products. And the dedication language is actually part of code. That was part of the ordinance that the city council adopted. So the dedication of the revenue from that tobacco excise tax is in our code of ordinances. And this is really just kind of a housekeeping measure about that community support grant funding formula, just memorializing that it is part of that, but it actually already is dedicated to tobacco cessation and education programs or public health programs by the ordinance you folks adopted.
Thank you, City Clerk. Councilman Bell.
My comments don't need clarification. Thank you. I just want to comment that, you know, this was originally the intent was to provide funds for smoking cessation programs or anything along those lines. So putting it into the community grants, I just don't agree with that. I think it just muddies the water. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. I support this wholeheartedly. And just to reiterate what Council Member Coleman said, I think this is good, and this is taking care of a lot of stuff. I support it fully. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Any further comments on this resolution? Okay. Let's see. City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir.
I'll restate the motion to approve Resolution 2023-09, amending the funding formula guide for the Community Support Grant Program to include the revenues from tobacco excise tax. This time I'll request a roll call vote.
Certainly, sir. Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
And Mr. Bell?
No.
On a roll call vote of 4 yeas and 1 nay, the resolution 2023-09 passes. Our next item is council directives to the city manager. Are there any directives? They need to be in a motion and seconded. Councilman Robinson, do you have any directives?
I do not. No, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Our next item is community input and announcement. This is a final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. You have 3 minutes. Hearing none. Anyone on the Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Okay, hearing no community announcements. Next item is the executive session, and I need to have a motion in a second.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I move to go into executive session to discuss public safety department personnel matters, which, if discussed in public, may tend to harm the reputation of a person. Present in executive session will be the mayor, council members, along with interim city manager Chris Laddick and acting city manager Bill Humphrey.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell and seconded by Councilman Tungle. This time we'll roll call.
On the motion to go into executive session, Luby?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Fungal?
Yes.
And Coleman?
Yes.
On a roll call vote of 5-0, we are in executive session at 7:18.
I'll just need to be able to call in on that one.
Call back in,
stay here on the Zoom meeting, please, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Chandler, and Mr. Laddick. We're going to use this Zoom.
Okay, great. Thanks.
The mayor's announced a short recess, so we'll be just a few minutes.
Thank you.